Spinning the disc, and this is the Thursday, November 18th, 2010, Zone 3 Advisory Committee meeting. Looks like we have a quorum, perhaps, and if Mr. Benedix can call the roll, we'll get moving.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Gehring. Ms. Lucy?
Here.
Mr. Ehring?
Here.
Mr. Myers?
Here.
Mr. Costello? Absent. Mr. Gehring?
Here.
Mr. Wallace?
Here.
And Mr. Reynolds, Mr. Costello, not here. We do have a quorum, Mr. Gehring.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Benedix, and this is the time for public comment. If you are a member of the public, you have a comment you'd like to make, please step forward and give us your name and address and whatever your issue may be. Going twice, seeing none. We'll move on to the meeting minutes of September 16th, 2010. And I've taken a look at mine. I don't have any comments. Anybody got comments or corrections?
I don't have any comments. I move we accept the minutes as written.
I'll second that. I read them.
I'll abstain since I wasn't at that meeting.
All right. Anybody else comments before we move forward? All right. Seeing no further comments, all in favor of adopting the minutes?
Aye.
Abstain.
Any opposed? Looks like we're unanimous except for one abstention. And Mr. Benedix, we are now to you for the operations report.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Gehring. You have pages 2, 1-2, and 2-2 in your packet that give an overview of the September and October monthly deliveries of water to the agencies. It also shows the lake elevation during those months. The lake elevation today is at 55, excuse me, the capacity of the Lopez is now at 55%. The plant production, right now the state water supply is off for their annual maintenance shutdown, which is approximately 3 weeks. We anticipate, John, the turn on back of state water, is that on the 22nd?
I don't know.
Okay. That's a scheduled date. I didn't check on that today, but that's a scheduled date of the state water coming back online. Our plant production averaging about 5.8 million gallons per day at the Lopez Water Treatment Plant. The turbidity range is 0.012 to 0.017. Terminal reservoir visibility is approximately 11.5 feet. Our downstream releases are 3.8 million gallons per day. I reduced those about a week ago from 4 million gallons per day, since our target is approximately about 3.9 million gallons per day. I did put a handout that wasn't in your package on each of your desks, and let me turn this monitor on here a second. The graph or bar handout that's I passed out to you is a sort of a pretty simplistic, but I think explanatory status of where we are on our releases for the water year that we track. And I'll try to talk while I use this on the screen if that'd be helpful, but. What this table is, it shows the releases from 2006 to current, and the top horizontal line is at 4,200 acre-feet per year. That's sort of our target or an average, I guess you call it. That's what the agencies have seen in their – or what is included in their contract is our environmental releases, and we vary on that because of environmental requirements for downstream releases for fish and agriculture. So the 4,200 is a kind of a target bar, and you'll see that in 2006, 7, and 8 that we exceeded that target bar, and I apologize for, I don't know why this viewer doesn't show the numbers, but you can see them on your tables, that we exceeded the 4,200 by about 200 to 700 or more acre feet in those 3 years. With the institution of the interim downstream release schedule in 2008-09, you see that we reduced our releases to 3,500 acre feet here. And once you get a perspective of where these lines are, you'll see that our projection for this year at the end of the water year is about 3,800 acre feet per year. We've broken the bars in half to try to see how we have tracking that, so you can see how our projection is being made. It's going to be a little bit more complicated maybe when we start showing individual months as we approach next April, but it gives you an idea of where we anticipate being on our releases. Another item I just wanted to mention, that we are preparing or developing a table that will show the total delivery and water reservoir level based on what our deliveries are for a water year, and what we anticipate environmental releases and evaporative losses to be. So we will try to project for you in the future as we go through the TAC and review it what we anticipate our water level will be at the end of the year. So we're trying to develop that, and hopefully we'll be doing that in the next 2 or 3 months. So we're trying to provide you with a little bit better of a forecast of where we think we're going to be for the year. And I think that's the end of my operations report, Mr. Gehring.
Question, Mr. Benedict. I notice on the bottom of the table it says water year, but are these bars from 1st of May to April 30th?
It should be April 1st to March 31st.
April 1st to March. So
yeah,
the bar for 2009 is in that?
That's for that water year ending March 31st, 2009.
Okay. The question is then, did we miss an opportunity to declare a surplus?
No, we didn't. We still, there was a question, I think, City of Pismo Beach, city engineer has requested that we re-review that surplus water formula and how we determine that in detail at the Technical Advisory Committee. We have been declaring no surplus water based upon having no spills, and obviously for the last few years because of the low water levels that we have had. So we will be discussing that in the TAC and going through that determination to make sure it's consistent and understandable by everybody at the next couple of meetings.
And when's that go to TAC?
That we will try to initiate that at the December TAC meeting.
Okay. Thank you. Questions or comments for Benedict? John?
No, I have the same question, Jim, as to how the relationship of the savings in these 2 years, 2009-2010, may relate to a surplus water. So, Dean, I guess you're going to be bringing that back to the TAC for a more detailed discussion of the methodology in which we're approaching that in conjunction with the agreement.
Yeah, we'll be doing that. I anticipate having a staff report for the next TAC meeting that outlines that, because it may be well stated or stated in detail, but there's a lot of interpretation in what that means. So we're going to try to firm that up so everybody's on the same page with that.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Lucy, anything? No? Mr. Ehring, no questions?
No questions.
Okay. anyone from the audience? Questions? Comments? Seeing none, last call. Anybody? Seeing none, we'll move on to item five. And I think that's you, Mr. Benedict.
Yes, I just wanted to come back to the advisory committee and the community, and there was a suggestion that we put the agendas online, and we have done that. We'll be doing that in the future. Any documentation that we have that's relevant to Zone 3, for example, the efficiency assessment, which was completed this year and has been sent out to the advisory committee and the TAC members, I believe just within the last couple of months, that is also posted online under the Zone 3 on the county water.org website, and we'll be doing that in the future. A note for anybody who would be interested, the Technical Advisory Committee is a closed meeting. It's not open to the public, and that's in order for us to be able to accomplish business and not have it as an open committee meeting. It's a technical group that that meets to discuss technical and specific issues for recommendations to come to your agency. So we will not be posting that online, so there's no conflict or misunderstanding there, but I just wanted to explain that.
Mr. Aaron, go ahead, please.
When you send out this online, it would be beneficial if these two graphs that you for operations, okay? If you put them out in color, I know that they're drawn up in color in the very first place, but if you put them out in color, they're easier to read. I don't know, maybe it's my eyes, but I can't tell the difference between shades and stuff like that. But if you just send them to us, my printer will print in color, so.
I agree with you. Probably the reason they're not is because we do them on a PDF type format and it doesn't print color, but you're right. They're much easier to read in color, so we'll see if we can do that. If not, maybe there'll be a separate attachment to the advisory committee members if we have to do a special email.
Mr. Myers.
Yes, but if you post those online, then Mr. Bendix, they would be posted in color, wouldn't they? So those that want to look at them in color could.
They may not be if they're PDF'd and they come out black and white, but I'll check into that and see.
So you think you post them as a PDF document?
I believe so, yes.
Okay.
So we'll try to see if we can accommodate that. I'm not sure if that's an issue or not. I'll find out.
Yeah. All right. I just thought that might solve Mr. Earing's issue. So.
Okay. Question? Seeing none, and I don't see anybody from the audience with it. Oh, I do see someone. Please come up and give us your name, address, and what your issue is. Marilee
Hyman, 2141 Shoreline Drive in Pismo Beach. I've never heard that you couldn't get color in PDFs. I do PDFs all the time. I get PDFs all the time. They are in color. It must be some settings when you save them. So I can't imagine that you can't do this. Thank you.
I say that, too. I get PDF and send PDF in color.
Maps and everything.
Okay. Thank you for that.
So it's a technical glitch.
Anything else? last call on that item, seeing no one else with a burning question. And Ms. Brunix, for our first quarter budget status.
For the record, my name is Jenny Brunick with County Public Works. Tonight's item is the first quarter budget status report for Flood Control Zone 3. There are three graphs reflecting the first quarter budget versus actual for fiscal year 2010-11. I inserted a line for each quarter as to the budget for that quarter and any variances between budget and actual on Mr. Wallace's request. So I hope it, hope it's satisfying. If not, let me know and I can play with it until I get it right. The first graph represents the routine operations and maintenance. As of the first quarter, we're under budget by $118,000, or 14%. The majority of savings is from the water treatment plant and then the required regulatory and operational testing for disinfection by products. The second graph represents the non-routine O&M. We are under budget by 79%, or $119,000. The majority of this is a pigging project, which is expected to be completed in January 2011. The third graph represents the capital outlay. Currently, we're over budget, 25% on that, or 119. But this is actually, I found out this afternoon that we finished the project, and so we're actually not over budget. We're over budget for this first quarter, but overall, you'll see the change in December. In the second quarter, we came under budget by $150,000 on the water treatment sludge beds project. So this first quarter, it looks like we're over, but next quarter, it'll hopefully balance itself. And overall, we were under 10% under budget this first quarter. So,
okay, thank you. Questions for Ms. Buter?
Sounds good.
Okay. Jenny, thank you for adding the table down below. That helps interpret the graphs very well.
And I can.
It's good to have good news.
Ms. Lucy?
It's good to have good news.
You think? Jenny, I have one thing. Assuming we go ahead with the pigging project on schedule, which is anticipated for December, and we spend the amount we think we're going to spend on it, what is that going to do to our budget status?
Well, there's savings in other projects. So at the end of the year, I mean, hopefully if it continues the way it goes, there'll be savings from other projects that we could offset that. So there shouldn't – well, would hope there wouldn't be any more charges towards that. And if we had to, we could pull from reserves. But the likelihood, I think, of us going over or what's the word I want to use? I guess just to say we have savings from other line items, so we wouldn't be asking for more money.
Okay.
That answers your question?
It does.
Okay.
And thank you for that. And did that discussion raise any other issues that on the part of anybody?
I just want to ask a question. You're keeping track of this, and this kind of after the fact, is the staff in their operations keeping any kind of track to see how their expenditures and everything are going before they're turned in?
Well, the routine O&M is what you really want to track as far as our labor and our water plant treatment process. And that's come under what is it? Where are we at, Jenny? We're a little bit underneath.
Actually, on O&M, we're 118,000 under.
Under.
Overall.
Yeah, we're. I guess the one way to characterize it is that this year is going to be much more of a normal year in the way of we have capital projects budgeted, the sludge beds, which is finished, the pigging, which will be done. We don't have any other large projects that could misrepresent the number or, you know, have a big lump sum. The sludge beds, as I think Jenny said, was around $55,000 under budget. $150,000 under budget. The pigging project, we only got two bids on, and that is going to ultimately be probably $50,000 to $75,000 over budget. But those are the only two projects, and those two balance out. So we don't really have anything that's going to skew our budget this year that we see that's going to be a major impact.
Have you worked everything out with the contractors who originally did some of the – I mean, you had some problems at the treatment plant?
Yes, we're done with those. We're done with all those folks, yes. Everybody is – been paid or going to be paid what they we're going to be finished paying them under the previous contracts we had. Paul Corporation will be completely paid by the end of next January. We've had a two-year maintenance contract with them, and that'll be up in January. That contract basically came in exactly as we bid it. There was really no significant differences. So we don't have any surprises out there. And I'll talk about the capital project maybe a little bit later. We got to revisit that, and there's a couple issues that could be expensive later, but we can control those and adjust those as the budget needs see fit.
Thank you.
All right. Anybody else? Questions? Mr. Wallace.
Jenny or Dean, does the Public Works administration and expenses for office staff show up on these graphs?
Yes, they're included.
They're in O&M.
So office and county overhead and the whole nine yards are rolled up into the various graphs. So this is the total budget?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Broken down by the three. But the
okay, good. Thank
total
you.
Of all three equal the budget.
Okay. Thank you for that. Anyone else? Anyone have a question for Ms. Brunick from the audience? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
And Mr. Benedix, we are to Quagga Mussel update.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Gehring. We are monitoring. Just for a brief recap, every month we monitor with several in lake substrate facilities we have for the presence of the initiation of quagga mussels, both in Santa Margarita and Lopez. The charts that you have, or the reports you have in front of you, as attachment number 4, are the September and October monitoring reports we have for Lopez. They also include Nacimiento, San Antonio, and Lake Cachuma. And as you see, there are no confirmations, no positive indications of quagga mussels as of now in any of those reservoirs. So that's good news.
Okay. Questions? Nope. I don't see any at the dais there. Now, how about from the audience? Anybody? Seeing none. All right. Great. HCP status. I notice Ms. Drexage is not here. And Dean, are you going to handle that?
Yes. Ms. Drexage, who was going to give you the report on the HCP status, she is the project manager for our environmental division. She went home sick today, was not feeling well, so I will give you a brief recap. Basically, the document that you should have numbered attachment 6, for some reason I have not labeled it all, but it's after attachment 5 in your packet. Labeled November 12, 2010. And this is a brief summary update of the issues that we brought to you at the last meeting, which Katie summarized in her memo that I put on your table. Again, as another attachment, and I lost the date on that, September 23rd memorandum. That's a more comprehensive list. This is an update to that list. And I'll just go through the items very briefly. First item is the HCP boundary issue, and we are still waiting to hear from National Marine Fisheries Service on their comments on the boundary of the HCP. And again, for those who may follow, Anthony Spina of the National Marine Fisheries Service was going to be here, because of budget restrictions, he was not able to. We will continue to invite him. Hopefully for every second or third meeting as he is available to meet with us. So we're not going to let go of that. We'll continue with that. The second item is a steelhead habitat survey above the dam. And as you see on the November 12th memo, Mark Allen of our consultant has completed the second round of habitat surveys the first week this month and expects to have the Habitat Suitability Index, which is the report of the habitat suitability of the upper Lopez Creek, to us early this winter. The third item is the...
Give us a... early this winter is kind of... Has he got a date?
No, we don't. I don't have a date
Stetson?
From him. No, this is a different consultant that we had who did a two-part survey. He did one in, I think, early summer, late spring this year, and he did another one in November. He had to do a spring and a November, spring and fall survey of the habitat because I can't tell you why, but they do biannual surveys. And he's a fishery specialist that is doing a cursory survey of how many fish are in the upper Lopez Creek area and what the suitability of that habitat for steelhead, regeneration, what the suitability of that is, so that National Marine Fisheries can assess that with respect to the HCP.
Okay, my definition of winter is starts in about December and goes until probably through February.
My guess is we have it in February.
Okay,
certainly.
That's what I like to hear. Thank
yes.
you. Sometime
yes.
in February.
Yeah.
Dean, could I have a question here, Dean?
Yes.
I've always had a disconnect between the study about the suitability for steelhead above the dam and the release of water below the dam. Am I missing a connection there someplace?
No, you're not.
So why are they, meaning the National Fisheries, concerned about the habitat above the dam?
Because in order for them to assess the, well, it gets complicated. In order for them to give us a suitable approval or a acceptable approval of the release schedule, they need to know the quality of habitat in the entire Rio Grande Creek. Okay, and before let me finish before you ask more questions, because there's one other complicated issue. That suitability basically tells them how good that creek all the way up, if the dam were not there, how good that suitability of habitat is for the steelhead. Now, they need to know that because they're giving us like a one-time review or, okay, one-time review because the dam is there. And once they give us this biological opinion assessment and we get a fish passage release and we get a take and we get an HCP, then there's no more going back to mitigating for the dam, which is the other complicated issue about this. So, and we don't see them pushing on this now, on the existence of the dam. It's an issue that they have brought up. But from our environmental staff's perspective, National Marine Fisheries can ask, and it's reasonable for them to request that we assess the entire Rio Grande Creek, even past the dam, even though the dam is there, even though the HCP is for releases with the existence of the dam, legally, without hiring attorneys to argue it, we feel it was reasonable and probably judicious for them to do an upstream survey habitat to be able to have that information for NIMS so they could proceed with the fish passage release, basically approval.
So would the end result be if the index, suitability index is high for fish above the dam, that the marine fisheries could then argue that there would be a real need to have a lot of water below the dam because there's a whole bunch of possibility that there ought to be more fish in below than there actually is or something?
Well, that's true, except we know they can't get up above the dam.
Yes.
It's true. Well, it's false because the lower part of Rio Grande Creek is not good habitat. Yeah. So it's complicated, but
I understand.
They asked for it.
I don't need any more explanation.
If it was a $100,000 issue, we'd have said, you know, we're not doing it. You need to go ahead and move ahead.
I think you've given me what I need to know. It's just you're doing what you have to do to move this thing along, and that's okay.
Yes, it's not the critical path item right now, I guess, is one of the reasons why also.
Good. Thank you. Appreciate that.
All right. Have you finished your presentation, Mr. Benedix?
Oh, I'm sorry. No, I was just answering Mr. Meyer's question on item two. Thank you for keeping me moving ahead, Mr. Gehring. On the flow regime model, we have been struggling with this and our consultant until I believe this week. We did have a telephone conference with our consultants and our staff, and I've directed them of how to move ahead with what we want them to do and how we want them to present it. We anticipate I'll have that by Friday, tomorrow, and we're preparing an endorsement letter to send that forward so that we can address the issues that NIMS has asked us about, which is basically the thing that's complicated about it is because when we have revised or prepared the fish passage release, it was inconsistent with what the HCP releases were in 2004 when we prepared it. And it's inconsistent in that we are going to be releasing more water as a baseline release, but we are releasing less water for fish passage release. And the reductions in the releases as we get more rainfall is going to be adjusted. There's a different methodology. So basically, there's a baseline release, there's a fish passage release on top of the baseline release, and then there's a ramping schedule, which is the third item. And we've adjusted both the baseline and the ramping because of the fish passage release analysis that we have done. The bottom line is we're not going to release any more water from the dam. The timing is just different. We have basically drawn the line with NIMS 2 years ago, and we said We have analyzed all these releases and passage and rate ramping releases, and this is as good as we can get. We told them that they wanted more data. We evaluated it. We need to use a different methodology to make sure that we don't release more, because that was one of our directives to our consultant, is in response to all this information NIMS is requesting, we're not going to do something to release another 200 or 400 or 500 or 600 acre feet. And that's what it was projecting, so we had to make some adjustments to that. So the final release schedule that we have prepared is a little bit different, but we didn't want to just send a letter back to NIMS saying, well, we increased water over here, so now we got to release it over here, and we're using a different methodology without some justification. So I think we have a good path to do that now, and I anticipate that we'll be sending that in to NIMS the first week in December at the latest. So that's the status of flow regime model. The agricultural pumping, I have no update on that other than we recognize that that's on our radar, and the Board of Supervisors has told us, directed the district to continue to work with the agricultural staff. Mr. Talley's not here tonight, but we'll continue to reach out to them as we can. But as we discussed, I believe, at the last meeting, that it's going to be NIMS kind of assignment or their responsibility to deal with ag pumping in the future if there's any issues. We will be monitoring that and addressing that as we need to, but we're not going to actively seek any type of, corroboration with the agricultural pumpers other than we're not going to be changing our program other than what we have with the IDRIS plan. Next item is seeking assistance to expedite the HCP process. We did solicit consultants who we were hoping would be experts in expediting HCPs. It seems pretty specific. We got two proposals. One was not basically qualified. The second one was from a firm called H.T. Harvey up in Eureka, I believe. And we have not brought that to the TAC or the advisory committee because we don't have a clear sense of what they can do for us. Their response included about a $325,000 price tag to revise the HCP. We didn't think anybody would be really thrilled about that. So we are going to be discussing with them options about what they can do for us, what they can help us with, and how we might go about that. The range of assistance goes from having them look at what we have done with our HCP and the responses and our working with NIMS for the last couple, 2 or 3 years for a relatively minor cost, to having them come and do a presentation to the TAC and the advisory committee about what they think might get us faster to the goal that we're looking for. Of course, there's no guarantee that they could come in and say, you know, you give us a contract for $300,000, we'll get you the HCP approved in 2 years. If they could, that'd be great. But we don't know where that is. And we, unfortunately, at this point, haven't found an expert. We are still seeking legal counsel assistance independently with respect to that, because Harvey's proposal did not include any legal assistance at that point. So that price tag I gave you did not even include any lawyers. So you can see that's a big price tag. So we're trying to see what we can get for something that's reasonable and what kind of assistance we can provide to move this forward.
It seems odd that that there isn't anybody between here and where is it, Eureka? Or in Oregon that somebody would want to bid on a job.
There's no experts
qualified to do this.
Yeah, there's no HCP experts, because only one HCP has been approved in California.
We're a pioneer.
And not for this type of scenario. There's been HCPs for, you know, environmental restorations, for other types of projects, but for a a creek and water usage HCP for fish and endangered species. There's been one, and it's not parallel to what we did. It was also up in Northern California. I don't know if Harvey did that one or not, but there's no experts.
Is what we're really looking for, though, is a consultant who is a marine biologist, right?
No, it's broader than that.
Branch of work?
No, it's broader than that because it's how to deal with the federal agencies and what their regulations can allow them to do and can't allow them to do. And the Endangered Species Act is so broad that that's still being tested and tugged upon. So, and that's part of the problem, is that, you know, that's why there's no regulatory time, money, scope limitations on the Endangered Species Act. There really isn't, especially when we're in a non-legislated, non-regulatory type of a project like an HCP. Now, we don't have to do the HCP because of some specific regulation. We're doing it to do a myriad of things, but it's not within a timed or a deliberate scheduled type of scenario.
Are any of these we have these people working around here on this salmon enhancement thing, okay? Are they even qualified or knowledgeable about doing such a thing?
Well, they're pretty focused upon their specific area of concern, expertise. Stephanie Wald is one, has been here, and she's obviously concerned about the salmon. We understand that, the steelhead. But that's kind of her area of focus. The RCD is involved in the entire resource. But the HCP is even broader than that. It's the entire habitat, plus it's the water, and it's the groundwater, and it's the entire operation of the system. So, you know, it would be nice to be a consultant team, but it's such a focused team, and you need a broader consultant that has done that before, plus attorney, plus legal, some of those issues. So it's sort of unprecedented, but everybody's sort of in the same unprecedented scenario of going ahead with these things.
Thank you for the explanation.
Sorry.
It sounds hopeless.
Well, it's not, as we, you know, we see the path. When I was talking with Mark Hutchinson, our environmental manager, even yesterday about this Harvey process, he said, because I was concerned about the next item, which is Fish and Wildlife Service review and coordination, and I said, I'm still, you know, I don't feel warm and fuzzy about U.S. Fish and Wildlife because I just see that as, like, that's the next five-year project. And he said, no, that's nothing like National Marine Fisheries because we got a real good handle on the frogs, the endangered species. We know what that is. We've done it dozens, if not hundreds of times. And we know those folks, and we know how they operate. Katie Drexage, for example, used to work for U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, so she knows, and that's fine. They're maybe easier to work with, maybe less broad of a perspective than National Marine Fisheries. But the bottom line is, you said, people don't follow the rules that they promulgate. You know, a question came up a couple of years ago, why didn't the HCP follow what the guidelines were that were distributed? Well, one, it was prepared before those guidelines were distributed. Secondly, is the people who reviewed it didn't want it like their guidelines told us to do it. So it's kind of a moving target, and everybody wants kind of what they want. National Marine Fisheries, NIMS wants an upstream habitat review. How does that relate? They want the existence of the dam reviewed. How does that so that's it just kind of goes all over. But we're trying to focus it. You know, it's like herding cats. We think we got them in a funnel almost, and a few keep leaking out, and we kind of track those and chase them and bring them back.
Kind of like a piece of mercury you put your finger on.
It's very much like that, yes. And I did want to, you know, to follow with that, the NEPA review item, which is the next to the last item.
Dean, I think Ms. Hyman's got a question.
Sure.
Merrill Lee Hyman. Mr. Chairman, would it be useful to seek expertise outside of California since we don't have really expertise inside California and this is federal?
Well, that's a question. How far did your RFP reach, Mr. Benedict?
Well, we solicited to, I'll say, the western United States, but recognize Arizona and Nevada is nothing like California. You know, you're pretty much talking Oregon. I don't know what Washington does. There's really nothing. There's really nothing else around California that's as environmentally sensitive as what we're doing. What I was going to say is a parallel is the pigging contract that we just talked about, the pipe cleaning contract. That contractor is coming from Texas to do our pigging project in December. There's a lot of stuff in Texas, but Texas has a lot of other different rules and different problems. So I've talked to consultants about consultants, and they don't know. Everybody wants to practice on our money and learn and train, and that's kind of the problem. Yeah.
So if you could pick up where you left off there.
Yes, the NEPA review was the last item I really need to discuss. We had a conversation on November 2nd with National Marine Fishery and their NEPA staff, and as we noticed here, as noted here, National Marine Fisheries has now said, well, we really need to have the fish passage documentation and regimen conceptually approved and acceptable to all of us before you go ahead and start that NEPA process, because the NEPA process depends upon two items from NIMP's perspective. One is the flow regime, and it is the Upper Lopez Creek habitat study that is being done that we just talked about a little bit ago. So they don't want us now to start on the NEPA yet until we get those two things to them. And the flow regime model, as I said, we'll submit in December, hopefully early January. We'll hear back from them. And hopefully those will both come together in February. And I don't even want to project what NIMS might do with the flow regime schedule because we're just out of running options. There's just no more to run. And it's a little bit frustrating because NIMS has a new hydrologist who has kind of initiated some of this stuff earlier this summer. And we think we got him on board, and I think our next step will be if he does more questions, we got to go down and meet with him and bring all the stuff that we've done and show him. We've already done that. We've gone this direction. We need you to finalize this thing and focus it and move it forward for us. And that's the end of my report, Mr. Gehring.
Okay, thank you for that. More questions. We'll start with Mr. Ehring. Anything else?
No, thank you. I asked him as he went along.
Okay, great. Mr. Myers, yeah. Anything?
Mr. Bennett, I think I saw somewhere in this report that the NEPA process is going to be pulled back into staff for the purpose of pushing it forward, being the lead agency, if you will. That's the proper term for NEPA.
Yes.
So, okay.
Yes, we will.
Okay. All right. Mr. Wallace, anything?
Not at this time, yeah. Thank you.
Ms. Lucy, anything? No, I don't have anything. Anybody from the audience have a question they'd like to ask at this point? Seeing none, let's go on to the next item then. Rio Grande Creek water use. Mr. Benedict.
Yes. This is on the agenda because I was going to ask the advisory committee their desire to continue to have this as a separate item since we're not actively working on that. If you want to maintain that or if there's information you want to address, it would be helpful to know what that is or how you want us to address it because we don't have anything, as I said, actively proceeding with that.
If I recall, this is an issue which it turns out that NIMFS is likely to follow up on once we get settled on our flow regime?
That is correct, Mr. Gehring.
Okay, thank you. Questions? Issues?
Yeah. No, I think we leave it off unless there's some enforcement activity or some activity coming from NIMFS that we need to take note of.
And if something did come up, we'd bring that to your attention.
Is everybody happy with that?
Yes, I think it's prudent myself.
And Ms. Hyman, do we have a comment? No? Anybody else in the audience? Seeing none, I think that'll work out.
I think I just, one of the reasons I put it on, because I know Mr. Ehring wanted us to have a report continually on that, so we will bring that only in specific instances of necessity.
Okay, thank you for that. And moving on to emergency supplemental state water, again, Mr. Benedicts.
Yes, I noticed Mr. Chisholm is here from the city of Pismo Beach. Thank you. And I don't know if he'd like to give you an update. I can give you a brief update on where we are with the emergency state water. Briefly, the Department of Water Resources has completed a negative declaration for the proposed supplemental emergency water project. That project consists of delivering 1,750 acre-feet of emergency state water for 1 year, I believe, to supplement our groundwater, our water supply. And so that has been completed. We have received a draft agreement from Department of Water Resources, which is a draft tri-entity agreement between DWR, Santa Barbara Flood Control and Water Conservation District, and San Luis Obispo Water Conservation District. And that's in the process of being agreed upon, processed, reviewed. That will be the implementing agreement to delivery of the water. We're not sure how long that's going to take. We would hope that it's completed along with the supplemental agreements, which would be between San Luis Obispo County Flood Control and Water Conservation District and the City of Pismo Beach, to provide the City of Pismo Beach that water so they could wheel that water with Grover Beach and Aurora Grande and whoever other users were going to be participating between a local agreements. So that's really the status that I have on that, and I don't know if Duane has an update about timing, but I would assume we'd be hope that we'd have that completed and water and finalized so water could be delivered this summer. I'll leave it there.
Okay, thank you for that. And Mr. Chisholm, did you have anything you wanted to add, bring up? I would simply note that NCMA agencies are working on internal agreements and they're in process. Questions?
No.
Ms. Lucy?
I might need some clarification on. Sorry, I'm sitting here at the staff table. I need some clarification on the amount of water it is. I've heard numerous numbers. I've heard 1,350 acre feet. I've heard 1,700. I've heard numerous amounts, 350 to stay with the county. So if I could get an accurate number on how much water we're talking about here, that'll be sole source to Pismo.
Yes, the contractor, the proposed agreement is for a total of 1,750 acre feet of water, state water, that would be provided to the district. 250 acre feet of that water would become the district's water as the banker's share, if you will, which would be reserved for other county uses, and 1,500 acre feet would be available to Zone 3 entities, or I guess specifically to Pismo Beach to be delivered to the other entities by their agreements.
So my other question would be, is that the cities or the areas around the area of this perceived emergency, the ones that lifted up on the pumping of this well, would they be included in this allocation, all the parties that did comply and lift up on the pumping, or would it be just to wheel water to the ones who didn't have the ability to pull up on the pumping?
Yeah, I see Mr. Chisholm stepping forward. Maybe he'd like to answer that one.
To directly answer your question, the current agreement that's being discussed at the Northern Cities Management Area is a completely voluntary program. So any agency that does not wish to participate does not have to. It's only those that would like to utilize that water that would participate. Those that are not interested don't aren't. There's nothing mandatory with regards to participation in the program, and the amount of water. Although there may be 1,500 acre feet that's available through the program, it'll be based on what each particular agency chooses to use. So one agency may say, I'd like to have 500 acre feet, another 200 acre feet, and someone else may say 50 acre feet. So it's really based on each of the Zone 3 agencies and their own desires.
Maybe you can answer a couple questions for me. My understanding is it's Pismo and Oceano that originally are the only two that are really capable of getting the water because it's state water. Is that true? Is that correct? So those are the only two entities that could be allocated the water, correct?
That's correct.
So it's not a table of cities. It's not all the five cities. No.
And each of those agencies that can get the water can then transfer that to another agency.
Right.
So you could essentially wheel the water through, for example, Pismo Beach, if there was a desire on the part of Aurora Grande or Grover Beach to exchange some water. The city of Pismo Beach can get the additional state water and then exchange that with those agencies if they so desire.
Another question I have is the definition of emergency. I think it's a loosely defined definition in this case because this is not a proven fact yet that there is intrusion, but that soon will be telling. And is it going to impact the future of needing, you know, state water on an emergency basis, on a true emergency basis? Since it is under a temporary program, is it going to impact, say we didn't get another drop, nobody got another drop, is it going to impact the state from giving us more water?
It won't have any effect on the state. The definition of emergency is based as a description of the water itself. It's not a description of the conditions that exist within the Tri-City Mesa area. It is a description of the water. This water is only provided on an emergency basis. It's emergency water that's being provided.
So the tests that were submitted to define an emergency, were all the samples submitted or just the ones showed potential?
There's no determination made. This is a request that was made by the Northern Cities Management Area as a group, and they asked for additional water. And the description that was used by both San Luis Obispo County and Central Coast Water Authority was to call it emergency water for use in a one-year period. After June 31st of this year, this water does not exist. The agreements no longer exist anymore, and everything is as it was before.
And there's no plans to apply for it again next year?
Depends on the conditions.
Uh-huh.
It depends on the conditions that the Northern Cities Management Area cities of what they would like to do.
And my last question to you, and I do appreciate your answers. Have there been other cities who have gotten this water year after year?
Oh, I can tell you that not year after year, but emergency water is very common. It's happened many, many times where one agency will deliver water to another agency on a temporary basis.
Right.
If you remember back in the early 90s when water was actually being wheeled from Ventura over to Santa Barbara, other
right.
places have occurred. And, you know, this is a very, very common practice
Let me try to clarify my question. Have there been other cities who have gotten temporary water year after year?
Yes. Matter of fact, within your agency. Your agency is providing temporary water to Aurora Grande, and it's happened year after year. So, yes, it happens.
No. Under CCWA, you're saying that this is temporary state water, and it's a one-time only situation. And my question is that are there geographic areas that have continually gone back to this source and gotten temporary water year after year after year.
In what context? What areas are you talking about? Are you talking about CCWA? Or are you
yes, CCWA. About?
No, there is none.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for that, Mr. Chisholm. That's very helpful. And Ms. Lucy, did we answer all your questions?
Yes.
Okay. Anybody else? Questions before we move on? Let's see. Just where are we on that? Did we? Is everybody happy with that?
I think we're done
conclusion?
On that one.
Okay. Anybody else from the audience? Any other questions or concerns? Seeing none, let's move on to. I see Mr. Ogren's not here. I suppose Mr. Benedict will give this one also.
Again, I apologize. Mr. Ogren left a note that he was not feeling well this afternoon when I saw him, and unfortunately I suggested that if he couldn't make it, he email me, and he did. So I'll provide his brief report on the bond refinancing information that we had discussed in regards to the Lopez seismic retrofit that was completed a number of years ago. The information I have, and I'll review this because it's mostly finance and I haven't been involved in it, but what he advised is that the agreements to approve the Lopez seismic refunding of the bonds have been approved by all the agencies, Aurora Grande, Grover Beach, Oceano CSD, and Pismo Beach, and they're set for approval by the Board of Supervisors agenda next Tuesday. That's the 23rd of November. And these agreements provide that the refunding must provide at least a 5% net present value savings, that's refunding of the bond, after all fees and costs have been paid. They don't extend the term of the bond so that the final bonds after refunding are paid off in 20 years, which is consistent with the existing bonds. So there's no lengthening of the term. The financial markets recently have seen increase in interest lately, so whether or not we proceed further with this will be dependent on the 5% net present value analysis that will be done subsequent to the Board of Supervisors' approval. So Mr. Ogren wanted to thank the agencies who had been working on that and provided those agreements. And as I said, the Board will move forward to that with those conditions. And apparently if the bond funding drops below the 5%, they'll probably leave the bonds in place as they are. That's my report on that.
Okay, thank you for that. Any questions?
Well, we approved it last.
Yeah. Mr. Wallace.
Tuesday. Okay. Just from what I saw on the board agenda, it looked like that there was going to be approximately $150,000 a year savings for this refinancing.
Yes, I believe that was the range of savings annually that we talked about.
And that would be split amongst the taxpayers and the agency and our Lopez payments.
Basically in pro rata share to right. their usage of water, volume of water, yes.
Dean, one final question. Does that result in lower assessments or taxes to the taxpayers as well on their tax bills? Or is it only in the payment of the agency?
I can't answer that. I don't know if that's going to be in the form of a rebate, a reduction. Jenny, do you know? I don't believe it would be a carte blanche reduction that they would see on the assessment. I haven't seen that happen in any of the adjustments we've made.
It would be lowered, not big dollar amount, but they'd see something
would
small.
Be lowered. I think that's
right,
important
on their tax bill.
I think that's important for folks to know that not only would the agencies be saving some money, but the taxpayers would be also on their tax bills.
Fairly.
Marilee Hyman, on our Tuesday council meeting, we were given a very extensive report on the bonds by George Eads. And Pismo Beach, for example, will save about $29,000 a year in its water costs. And he said that for Pismo Beach, anyway, because of the way we have set up our payment for this water bond, about 95% of the savings will show up on the Pismo Beach tax payments. About 5% will be in the O&M, just the regular water rate use. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for that. Anyone else on that item? Seeing none. Ms. Lucy, you have something?
Yeah, I need a little bit of clarification on that because at our last board meeting, we were informed by Mr. Ogren and the CAO of the county that Oceana would not be included in that refi due to the fact that we're administratively behind on our audits and that our taxpayers would not benefit from that refi at all. And so, which was somewhat disturbing to a lot of us, but many people know that we've, you know, administratively we've had our difficulties, but it was disheartening that that our fellow members at the table, you know, couldn't carry the area until we could get caught up on those audits. So Oceana will not be included in that, my understanding.
Well,
and please correct me if I'm wrong. I'd love to be wrong.
Did Oceana approve the agreement to refinance the bond? If it was subject?
It was an option.
What?
It didn't come to us as an option. It came to us as you're not included. So please.
Wasn't that harsh. But
I took it that way.
No, there was some administrative paperwork that hadn't been filed with the agencies, the required agencies, continuing disclosures. So that would have penalized everyone else who, let's see,
The reason why I bring it up is because I want the record to be straight.
Yes.
You know, I don't want us to get down the road and be under the impression that Oceana's portion of this was refied along with everybody else's.
No, it wasn't. But
and I think that's the point.
But your payment will remain the same. I mean, that's not going to change.
Yeah.
But that is correct. The paperwork wasn't in, so we couldn't. And I personally called your manager and asked for the information and was told that it wasn't available. So.
But Jenny, won't the taxpayers in Oceana receive the same kind of benefit that other taxpayers in the district receive?
The bond council who we submit all the paperwork for, and actually the rating, who does actually the rating agencies, needs the financial statements, audited financial statements, continuing disclosures. They need all those reports to base whether they're whether they qualify, or I don't want to say, we just want to make sure everything that is, I don't know how to put
this. The strength of the application depends on everybody conforming. Is that fair to say?
That's it. They all have to have strong numbers and with unaudited financial statements and the continuing disclosure. It would have been hard for them to make that determination.
But I guess my question is more general. The property tax payers picked up a portion of the payments for Lopez and the bonds. Won't the Oceano taxpayers, regardless of whether Oceano was up to date on their stuff for their water payments from the district, won't the taxpayers receive the benefit of this refinance, no matter where they live, in Pismo or Oceano?
No, because it's calculated based on it's a formula.
Assessed valuation.
Right. So it's a formula that we use to calculate the bond payment. And so, no, they wouldn't.
So is there an opportunity for Oceano to come back into the program if they provide the documentation that you've requested?
You know, I'm not sure. I'm not really sure on that. I'm guessing no, since we've already received our rating based on the four agencies. And they need to see financial statements. I've had to gather all the data from.
No, I understand that, but so, it seems pretty dramatic if Oceano can't, by proving up on the documentation, get back into the program, the refinance.
And I appreciate that. And people have to remember, we're a staff of five. You know, these cities have hundreds of people who work for them. Our little town has five people who work for them. You know, we're the smallest out of everybody. So I don't know. I didn't see any of the letters requesting.
I personally
I'm sure you went through great lengths to even get a hold of the same person at the same time.
Right, so.
Right. It's just very disheartening.
I understand.
Mr. Ehring.
Yeah, may I speak to this issue? It seems to me that they have already got the rating from the bonding company. I mean, and just by the financials that have been submitted by primarily the two major cities that are involved in this, as a Royal Grande and Pismo Beach, okay, and the assessed valuation of those communities have given you already an A-plus rating on those bonds. So the bonding company should be satisfied whether they've turned in their assessed valuation papers or not. And from that point forward, once the bonding company has assigned that assessed, you know, that rating, that's just going to tell you what amount of money they're going to charge you. I mean, based on the rating, it doesn't seem to me that they should be penalized, or that they at least should be given the opportunity to submit their assessed appreciation of their community. That's what you're looking for the, I mean, if Oceano owes a lot of debt, okay, and no way to pay that debt, and that they're basically, I don't know, let's say that they don't have money to meet their bills, which is not the case because they're in the county. It seems to me that that they ought to be able to make up that difference and provide that paperwork. I don't think they should be penalized for that.
I don't.
Is that something we can
That's
have?
That's my opinion.
Is that something we can get a report on at TAC?
Yes, I can provide that. But since it's on the agenda at the board on Tuesday, we can't change that. But I can certainly bring a report back and explain that better.
There was a lot of emails and information that went out. I just want that to go on.
On record, we made an effort.
Look, it's not a blame situation.
No, I understand that.
And we've had dramatic staff turnover, and you know, and historical documents missing, and we've hired auditors, outside auditors, to sit in rooms. So, it's not a blame issue, but it's also not kept in the dark either. Everybody knows we're two audits behind. You know, it's not a big secret. So, you know, we can only do the best we can. But what's sad is that we weren't given the opportunity, nor were we. Well, I sat in this meeting last time and got a report and was not aware that Oceano had been not kept in the equation of that refinancing. And then when it got to the board, it was disclosed that we were excluded. So it was confusing, but it's not a blame thing.
No, I understand that, but I just want to go on record that we made every effort to include Oceano.
Does the Board of Supervisors have to act on Tuesday because of some deadline on the refinance?
Well, there's the rating, and they're, I mean, like as Dean stated, the interest rates are going up, so we don't even know if it's a go.
We're on the verge of it not happening, it sounds like, based on the increases in interest rates. Because this was made known to us, it was earlier, not really too long ago, and we're trying to catch up with it before we miss the window.
Well, with respect to Oceano, I think it would be nice if perhaps Jenny, you or Dean or Pavo could maybe email Raphael, maybe myself and Miss Lucy, as to whether or not Oceano would have an opportunity to get back into the program at a later date when all the documentation is provided.
You know, I think we're missing something here. The whole bond's being refinanced, whether Oceana's involved or not. If the whole bond's being refinanced, then the rates across the boards are going down, and everybody's going to have to benefit from it.
Seems like that.
I just think somebody's missing something. There's a real disconnect in how this is being presented. I know the bond market. I used to work in it some. The council provides ratings, and once they're done, and it goes to the underwriter, the money comes. So it's the bond attorney that really controls whether or not this money comes forward. That's been done, and you can't undo it, not in time to do anything. So I think when we get the final word in, maybe Mr. Bendix will find out for the
We can.
But that the rate for the whole bond goes down. They're not refinancing 10% or 100%. They refinance the whole thing, I think. Is that right?
That is correct.
Well, then everybody gets the benefit. They're paying a proportionate share under the contract we have. And whether they came in or not, I don't know whether that makes any difference or not other than hurt feelings. So I think we're beating a dead horse.
Exactly. That seems to be the case if all the bonds are being financed. But maybe Dwayne has some very technical insight here we could benefit from.
I'm going to say something. I'm going to take this back to Will, and maybe he can send you an email or something tomorrow. He probably has better answers than I do because I've just okay. had to gather the information.
World.
So it is very.
Yeah, very
complex.
Thank you, Dwayne Chisholm, City of Pismo Beach. The whole bonds are being refinanced, and in essence, what the county is doing is they're paying off the debt for Oceano. So Oceano is not part of this bond because their debt is being completely paid off by the county. So the county is getting the benefit of the reduced rates, and they have a separate agreement with Oceano. Now, it seems to me that Oceano should be able to work with the county to to look into that rate that they're being, the existing rate that you're getting, and look and see if there could be some discount that would be provided to Oceano because it is a separate agreement between the county and Oceano moving forward.
All right. It's all solved. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for that. So before we leave that, any other questions, comments? Mm-hmm. No? So, capital project updates, sludge bed.
Yes, the two main projects that we have been working on were the sludge bed expansion at the Lopez Water Treatment Plant, and that was the addition of two large sludge bed pits, I guess basically you call them, or reservoirs, which take the treated effluent water residuals that we can't process back into the main pipeline and maintain those, settle the solids out from those and dry those out so we can get rid of the sludge that results from that. That project was finished last week, and we are now looking at a schedule of how we want to start using those with the upcoming winter and next summer to be able to be rotating the basically six sludge beds that we have using the four new ones. So that's finished. The pigging project on the 18-inch pipeline through Grover and Pismo Beach will be accomplished December 27th through December 30th. That's the week after Christmas before New Year. That project contract will be going to the Board of Supervisors next Tuesday for approval. As I may have mentioned, we got three bids on that project. One of them was non-responsive. One was $375,000. One was $725,000, more or less. We attempted to do that as a maintenance project because we didn't want to have a general contractor practice on our pipeline getting pigging experience. And, in fact, V. Lopez and Sons is a successful bidder on that project, and they did the last pigging project for us, I believe, the Oceano Pipeline. And they're using the same contractor they used to do the pipe cleaning, the pigging, as they did last time, which is the contractor from Texas. So we feel good about that project, a little bit more expensive than we thought. We hope we'd get some lower bids, but We'll be assessing how to do that differently because, as was presented to some of the TAC committees and some other various committees, as we did the Lopez distribution line capacity assessment recently, there is some concern that the 33-inch pipeline, which conveys all of the Lopez water from the water plant and the state water to the downstream users, has some restrictions in it. And so we'll be considering whether or not we need to develop a pigging project for that section of pipeline actually next month when we evaluate the budget for next fiscal year. So, but we will be proceeding with that. We have three main items. The treatment plant, the treatment system to take the dirty water that comes out of the pipe as we flush the pipe. That'll go through a series of tanks that will be basically parked on Shell Beach Road, I believe. And we have the actual pigging contractor who will be coming out from Texas to run the pigs through the pipeline. And we have the general contractor who will be doing traffic control excavation to get the insertion and the extraction points opened up for us and do the general supervision of the project. So everybody's pretty much geared up and on track for that. We've made all our contacts and things look good for that. That's the end of my report on the capital projects.
Okay, thank you for that, Mr. Benedicts. And but to add somewhat to the pigging project, there will be a significant coordination effort between all the agencies in the county, and so that's an ongoing process at TAC level.
Yes.
So questions, comments?
No, fine.
Mr. Wallace.
Dean, I understood from the Board of Supervisors' report that the cost was $416,000 plus an additional 40-some-odd thousand for contingencies. Maybe I misquoted.
$417,000 includes the construction management and all the support costs in addition to the contractor cost, and we have added $42,000 as contingency for anything that may come up.
Yeah, it's just my point was the $375 sounded less expensive than what I remember for the total cost of the project.
That's correct, yes. We are about $50,000 over what we budgeted and estimated for that when all is said and done. But we feel that's a good price. We've got some good numbers that back that up. We considered re-advertising. We don't see any reason to do that.
How long will that take for the process?
To do the work?
Yeah.
Things go well, 2 days.
Equipment's going to be done, shut down Shell Beach Road, and they'll be without water for a certain length of time. Yes?
From the distributions, well, no, nobody will be without water. Everyone will still having water. We will shut down the main distribution line, so there will be other feeds or back feeds to make sure that all the cities and the entities have water available. The shutdown itself could be as good as only 2 days. It could be as long as 4 days if things go a little bit bad. And we're doing it during that time period because school's out. It's a low water usage. It's probably the best time of year other than Christmas to do it.
Okay, I'm a little bit upset. I need to ask Dwayne. While he's here, may I do that, Mr. Chairman?
You're welcome to.
Because it would seem to me that the main line going down Shell Beach, they take water off of that to that area from what street?
You are correct. The under normal conditions, the main source of water is the Lopez pipeline that comes through and basically goes from south to north through the city. However, we have various connections between the various zones to where we can connect those zones and isolate that line and still maintain water service throughout the city using our water well system. And during this particular period, that's what we intend to do to make those connections to bypass this. So we have parallel water mains that are available that can meet this need.
Oh, okay, thank you. For the public, the Lopez main line does not feed every service on Shell Beach Road. It's the main feed to the city's distribution line, which can be, as Dwayne said, backfed.
And our reservoir tanks that we have will be sufficient to take care of that if it doesn't go more than 4 days. Huh? Okay, thank you.
Okay, anything else?
No.
Seeing none. Seeing no one from the audience burning to come up to the stand and talk to us. All right. Future agenda items. That's me, but I think Mr. Meyer.
I have something. My agency, Grover Beach, has asked that I propose to go in Zone 3 that we agendize an item early 2001 to explore how the agencies could participate more in the early input on the budget items to be able to know what the budget items are coming up and to have some input on that. Now, the trouble is we don't know how that should be done, and I'm suggesting staff might think about this issue and report back a way that would make sense to have this work, how staff might be able to involve the agency somewhat in an early fashion and to get and allow the agencies to then have some input in an early fashion. So that's what I'm suggesting. We maybe agendize that just to explore the issue and with maybe with staff taking the lead on how that might work, because I don't have a clue how it might work. And I'm not going to be here next year anyways.
And Mr. Benedict, there's a letter of September 14th, 2010 from Mayor Scholes to the Board of Supervisors chairman. That, and I think there's been another letter from perhaps Pismo Beach and yet another from Arroyo Grande.
AG sent one in.
That is similar in character. So I'm thinking that those letters, presuming they all exist, should be subject of discussion on the meeting in January.
Mr. Gehring, are those letters in the same topic as Mr. Myers just advised?
They are. Now, there's a copy of the letter from Mayor Scholes here, which if you haven't seen that, then you can.
I have not.
That's a spare. I would give that to him if you'd like.
Okay. I would just note that we did get that request from your city manager. Right. When we talked to him, I believe in February. And he suggested we have some initial meetings. We've already had one meeting, I believe, 2 months ago or a month or so ago.
Yes.
To discuss these items, and what I would just like to make sure of is that we will be doing our budget draft next month, and we do go these through the topics that are significant adjustments or significant capital projects with the TAC, and so we will certainly try to figure out how to bring that information earlier. I'd like to make sure I know what substance you want to see, so we can make it a valuable meeting as far as a discussion of topics go.
The suggestion that the message I'm bringing is not geared toward any particular time that this has to be done. So I suggest you go through your normal TAC meeting next month, maybe discuss it there, and out of those discussions, come back with something that makes sense to everybody. And because you know your problems better than we do in the agencies, just trying to get some early input. If the TAC's the way to go, there's no other way to go. Maybe that's the answer. But I'm the messenger. Don't shoot the messenger. Aren't
no, I, no, I'm not. Okay. I don't even have a gun, or that didn't even cross my mind. I just wanted to make sure that I understood, because February, Jenny, don't we release the draft budget in February? We'll actually provide that data. Now, I guess what I'm trying to understand is you'd like more input even before that, and there's really nothing available.
I understand they want ongoing input preliminary to the money being spent to have some input as to whether it makes sense to spend the money, whether it makes sense to do whatever you people are doing. It seemed to me what I see, you're doing pretty much what you ought to be doing. But my message is that not just Grover Beach, but the other cities. We had a meeting, I guess three of the cities signed on to that concept anyway, at the sort of a water meeting we had a couple of months ago. And the city of Grover Beach is scheduled on their schedule for February 7 to have a special meeting about water. Again, since I'm not going to be there, I'm not privy to what that's going to be because I haven't bothered to inquire. But so they're concerned about the cost more than anything else, and great ratepayers having trouble with escalating cost. And
we certainly understand that.
And I understand from what we heard tonight, your cost have come back down. So maybe that concern is late in coming, but it is there, and somehow it ought to be addressed and put to bed. I think one way or another.
All right.
But there are specifics in the Mayor Scholl's letter, so you'll have a copy of that to review. And if there are some things that we can do that will be effective at TAC level ahead of time, we should look at that.
Okay.
But otherwise, I'm thinking it should be agendized for the January meeting.
Okay. I was at that meeting, and it was my understanding that what most people – Most of the local agencies in Zone 3 were feeling that we pay for this, okay, but yet we don't have any conceptual or consent authority over how the budget is put together, and it just comes back down to us and says, okay, you're going to pay for this. And then we have to figure out how we're going to do it through taxation versus fees, and for the entire water. And so it was felt that there should be some more of a conceptual thing than an advisory for this board, and. One of the ways that the IWMA works is through a joint JPA, which is a joint powers agreement. That might be the extreme. If that might be the extreme. But they just kind of felt like we need to have some kind of a say what goes into the budget in the beginning, so that the budget just doesn't come around to us and then say, now you advise us. You either advise the board supervisors or you don't. And that was kind of the strong feeling of it.
Okay. I understand.
You understand?
Yeah, and I'm not trying to defend anything.
I'm not either at this stage because I talked with Marianne Reese, our mayor, this morning or this afternoon. And she, I was not aware that John Scholl's had written this letter, and I asked her if anything had been done about the meeting that we all had, and she said not to her knowledge, but we weren't CC'd on that, so we didn't know John had gone forward with this, and she said she has one more meeting with the a mayor's meeting, and she would appreciate the opportunity to bring that up or bring this up at that meeting.
Yeah, just the reason I asked the question is because a couple of years ago when we started to have this issue with Aurora Grandy initially, we did meet with them, and I think we met with the city of Pismo to review what our CIP, our capital improvement project budget, was. And because of the pressures and the issues associated with costs, we modified that significantly and tried to draw a baseline on that, which is basically $500,000 a year. So we have revised that basically in response to that from a couple of years ago. We're continuing to do that. So I'm just asking the question because within 3 weeks I've got to draft a budget, and I don't know that I can get anybody together to tell me what that's supposed to happen differently than what we're doing now. So that's why I'm kind of just prodding, I guess, a little bit to find out.
That's not an issue.
Okay.
So, Mr. Benedict, I'm gathering that you have not seen the letter from Mayor Scholl's.
I have seen none of those.
So since it's addressed to the Board of Supervisors, the chairman of the board, perhaps you could inquire with Mr. Ogren if he's seen it or he can get a copy of the other letters, because we only have this one.
I will. Certainly. And I'll bring those back to the TAC probably too, Mr. Gehring, so we can address that.
Anything else on that issue?
No, that's it. It's covered.
Okay. And Mr. Earing, do you have any agenda items that you want to add?
No. That one is important to us. You've already taken care of it, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Wallace, anything?
Just a comment about maybe it's under committee member comments as well, Dean, but it was advantageous when Anthony Spina came to address our group. And I understand the budgetary restrictions that NIMS has, but we're investing a lot of money into this HCP, and NIMS controls a lot of the process. So I think it's good to have a face-to-face meeting with him from time to time. So if he can't get his agency to pay for it, I don't know what the travel costs are for him to come up here, but maybe the county picks up part of that cost to have him come. But he more or less promised when he addressed us last year that he would be available on a quarterly basis, and that's four trips a year for a project that we've invested millions in and or $1 million in, and I think has a great impact on the five-city area here. So maybe there's some way that we can find a way to get Mr. Spina here for, if not a quarterly meeting, unless at least biannually.
Okay. I will investigate that and see if we can facilitate that.
Yeah, well, if we agendize, that's something we should agendize, I think, because I don't think that the county should pay to have him come up here, because this is a federal program. These salmon are U.S. Fish and Wildlife, and that's HCP has to go through the federal government, so the federal government should pay the money to get him up here.
I was biting my tongue when I said that, but I'm just looking for some way to get him here so that...
I can understand the desire to have him here, but I firmly believe that the federal government should make sure that he gets here. So,
you know, look, he agreed to come, I think, four times a year. Did he?
I think he mentioned that they did have budget constraints when he mentioned that. We will continue to ask if he doesn't show up. We'll expect that he be here in January.
Yet the federal government, I might add that the federal government just spent $600 billion to buy back bonds, and it's increasing the cost of our bonds. So they ought to be able to pay for his expense to come up here.
Well, if nothing else, we could video conference him in.
Okay.
So it's not impossible to get some face-to-face time with him.
Right. Okay.
Okay. And Ms. Lucy, anything?
No.
And committee member comments? Anybody got anything else?
No.
Okay.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving. Next meeting is Thursday, January 20th, 2011, 6:30 at Grover Beach.
I might tell you that, you know, I mean, we have a new mayor, and some of these other cities might have new mayors, and they're responsible for the people who sit on this committee. So okay. I may or may not be here.
Well, you might get.
Yeah, who knows?
Who knows?
Who knows? We got a new mayor.
Yeah, that's-